Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. We open our show with our Capitol report, including allegations that President Trump may have engaged in witness tampering by appointing a federal judge who is married to a White House lawyer and is a key witness in Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's investigation. Then we have a warning for recipients of public benefits in California about a scam involving EBT cards. CalVet, the state's Veterans Affairs Department, is warning that the tax plan just passed by the House of Representatives puts key programs for veterans at risk. Now, if your child's holiday wish list includes a hoverboard, you may want to think twice. We'll tell you about some recalls due to fire hazards on today's show. Then on our health report, hear the latest on the hepatitis outbreak that is finally showing signs of slowing down. Hear about a Living with Lions program at a local winery where you can learn about mountain lions in our region. Our newsmaker interview today is with Dash McTavish from Food Not Bombs, a group that is planning to defy El Cajon's ban on feeding homeless in public parks. Here's some fall fire safety tips today, and then on Destination East County, learn about festive events coming up, including the Mother Goose Parade, holiday concerts, a country music in Julian, a community bonfire, and a hike up Vulcan Mountain by the light of a supermoon. Find out about a turkey drive for the holidays in East County and how you can help. Learn about sign-up deadlines for the Affordable Care Act, and hear some holiday trivia to liven up your Thanksgiving dinner conversation. And finally, we'll be re-airing our interview with the curator of the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is John Fastier with a Capitol Report. A former White House ethics lawyer is accusing President Donald Trump of tampering with a witness in Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's investigation into whether Trump's campaign colluded with Russia and whether Trump has obstructed justice. The witness, attorney Ann Donaldson, is chief of staff to the White House counsel Donald McGahn II, and she has been interviewed by Mueller's investigation about her conversations with McGahn and Trump's firing of former FBI Director James Comey, the New York Times reports. Tampering with the witness is a federal crime. Trump has appointed Donaldson's husband, Brent Talley, to be a federal district judge in Alabama. Talley has never tried a single case. He did serve as Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the Justice Department. In a rare unanimous vote, the American Bar Association has rated Talley not qualified. Talley faces confirmation hearings in the Senate, where he was not truthful on his Senate questionnaire. Asked about family members who are likely to present potential conflicts of interest, he did not mention his wife. He also failed to mention her work for the White House chief counsel when asked to disclose contacts with White House lawyers, Law and Crime reports. As a federal district judge, he could be asked to rule on cases challenging presidential actions, as when judges in multiple states blocked Trump's travel ban. Norman Eisen is a former White House chief ethics lawyer who is now chairman of the board at Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. On Tuesday, he sent a series of tweets blasting Trump's appointment of Talley and the administration's efforts to obscure the judicial nominee's marriage to a White House lawyer and witness in the Mueller probe. Eisen tweeted that these actions amount to, quote, not just nepotism, but also potential conflict of interest and or witness tampering, a Trump reward to the unqualified family member of a witness in the Mueller investigation. No wonder they tried to hide the relationship, end quote. The ethics attorney concludes, This should be reviewed by the Federal Council.
Now it's time for East County Magazine's Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers Report, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
This is Valerie Watts with a scam alert for public assistance recipients. The county's Health and Human Services Agency is warning anyone who uses an electronic benefit transfer or EBT card for accessing benefits to be aware of a text messaging scam. While there have been no reported victims in San Diego County, there have been cases in other parts of California, and the county wants residents to be aware of the potential risk. Perpetrators are targeting people who get CalWORKs, CalFresh, and General Relief. The scammers send a text to public assistance recipients about their benefits, asking them to call a phone number for more information. When the person calls the number, an automated message system tells them to register their EBT card by entering their card, PIN, and Social Security numbers. The message says if they don't, they will lose access to their benefits. Those using EBT cards to access benefits are reminded to safeguard their personal information, including passwords and PIN numbers. Anyone who receives a suspicious text message should contact the California EBT Consumer Service Helpline at 877-328-9677 or the county's Health and Human Services Agency Access Customer Service Center at 866-262-9881.
CalVet Secretary Dr. Vito Imbastiani has issued a statement warning veterans about the impacts of the tax proposal that Congress is now considering. He says, former service members living in California could end up on the streets if Congress passes its draft tax proposal. This hasty plan would eliminate tax-exempt bonds, which help us fight homelessness and find affordable housing for California veterans. Two of CalVet's critical housing programs rely on tax-exempt bonds. Proposition 41, which funds affordable housing for homeless vets, and the state's 95-year-old CalVet loan program that makes ownership possible for veterans who cannot qualify for a private loan. The CalVet loan program has helped more than 600 veterans and their families secure affordable housing in the past year. And Proposition 41 has helped the agency place more than 2,000 veterans and their families into stable homes. Dr. Imbastiani says, the careless tax proposal would reverse this progress and exacerbate California's housing crisis. We owe our former service members better than that. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Valerie Watts with a Consumer Product Safety Report. If your child's holiday wish list includes a hoverboard, you may want to tell Santa to think twice before delivering one. The Consumer Product Safety Commission issued 7 more hoverboard recalls Tuesday due to fire and explosion hazards. The commission has previously recalled many other hoverboard models. According to a safety alert issued by the commission, at least 250 fires related to hoverboards have occurred since 2015. A hoverboard caused a house fire in Pennsylvania in March that killed 2 young girls ages 2 and 10. At least 13 people have been burned by hoverboards, and they have caused over $4 million in property damage. Lithium-ion battery packs can overheat, causing the hoverboards to ignite or burst into flames. To see if your hoverboard is compliant with federal regulations, you can check for a UL 2272 certification label. If your hoverboard was sold before January 29, 2016, it is not compliant. But even some UL 2272 compliant hoverboards have overheated and sparked fires, so there is no assurance of safety with any of the devices. If you own a recalled model, you should stop using it immediately and contact the manufacturer. For any hoverboard, charge it only when you are home, awake, and in the room to watch it. Report any incidents of hoverboards overheating, smoking, or starting fires to saferproducts.gov. You can find information on the makes and models included in the current and previous recalls at the Hoverboard Information Center on the Consumer Product Safety Commission website at cpsc.gov.
This is John Fisteer with a health report. The hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego County appears to be slowing, the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency has announced. Only 2 new cases have been added in the past 2 weeks, and the number of new cases has been declining over the past 11 weeks. The county and its community partners have provided over 100,000 vaccinations, including more than 84,000 to at-risk populations, also taking steps to improve sanitation and education about the disease that has sickened 546 people and killed 20 in the past year. Although the outbreak is slowing down, health officials ask the public to remain vigilant and is encouraging those in any at-risk group to get vaccinated. Although most cases locally have been among homeless people and illicit drug users, several other cities are reporting outbreaks among gay men, so the county is urging them to get vaccinated. Free vaccinations will be provided November 22nd from 3 to 6 p.m. at the San Diego LGBT Community Center. Others at risk include people with chronic liver disease, clotting factor disorders, and those who travel to countries with hepatitis A outbreaks. The county is also recommending vaccinations for food handlers, homeless people, those who work with the homeless, and individuals who clean up after homeless or users of illegal IV drugs. To help prevent the spread of the disease, frequent hand washing is also recommended.
Shy, but by no means cowardly, our hills are alive with mountain lions. The Ramona Ranch Winery is hosting a special presentation by the Mountain Lion Foundation and the Julian Project this Saturday, November 18th at 1 p.m. Whether you call it a catamount, a cougar, a puma, a ghost cat, or any other of its 40 names, it is important to know how vital this animal is to our local ecosystem and how we can safely coexist with this elusive creature. The Ramona Ranch Winery is located on Highway 78 in Ramona. For more information on this complimentary program open to the public, you can email Terry at RamonaRanchWines.com or visit RamonaRanchWines.com. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Valerie Watts.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County and streaming live worldwide on KNSJ.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today my special guest is Dash McTavish. Dash is with Food Not Bombs, an international organization, and he's going to be speaking with us today about their efforts to overturn El Cajon's ban on feeding the homeless in public parks. Dash, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us today.
Well, it's a pleasure. Can you start by giving us some background about Food Not Bombs?
Food Not Bombs is an international organization based on every continent. We've been around for 30 years. We started in 1980 in Cambridge, Massachusetts by anti-nuclear activists. We are an intersectional group that believes in recovering food that would normally go to waste and using it to feed any community members that might need it without restriction. We often serve food in open public spaces every week and support most anti-homelessness measures.
Okay, very good. El Cajon's City Council recently voted to ban the feeding of homeless people in public places such as parks, and the reason given for this was the countywide hepatitis emergency declaration. You know, the majority of the hepatitis has occurred in the homeless as well as in drug users, and they've been trying, according to the city, to try to prevent the spread of this. Dash, what is your concern with this policy?
Food Not Bombs has taken the stance that the city ordinances are unjust. We believe that the community most affected by the hepatitis A outbreak is the houseless community of San Diego. The people dying in the community of Hep A outbreak are the houseless community, and instead of offering help, the city has doubled down on its enforcement against the houseless community and penalized them for basically their existence. Charity groups have been told not to serve food anymore and not to help them, but we don't understand.
We should say they did recently pass a plan that did offer some help and some increases in services to the homeless, but it also outlawed panhandling and sleeping on sidewalks is banned and some other things. So it is very difficult to be homeless in El Cajon. Now, as far as the feeding in the parks per se, I understand that there are a couple of organizations, yours being one of them, that is planning a little civil disobedience to basically go out and feed the homeless anyway in defiance of the ban. The first of these events is coming up on Sunday the 19th in Wells Park. That's not your organization's doing. And then you have one coming up on the 25th on Saturday, I understand. What time is that going to be?
That event is going to be at 5 p.m. at Wells Park.
So you believe it's morally, this is sort of like the civil rights movement to you in a sense, that if it's an unjust law, you need to do what you believe is just?
I mean, throughout society, there have been unjust laws.
How far are you prepared to take this? If the city comes around and orders you to disband, what will happen?
Well, I'm hoping that the members of the community and the city government will not take drastic action against us trying to share food with other community members in a park.
Yeah.
But if they do, I mean, I feel that we're willing to take tickets or even arrest if that is the case.
Okay. Now, Mayor Wells was invited to be on the show today. He was not able to make it. He did agree that he will come on in a couple of weeks to talk about the homelessness issue, as well as some other things happening in El Cajon, such as potentially the reopening of the theater out there. So we're glad to hear that. He told me that, you know, he was put off by this week's city council meeting where there were a number of people who showed up to speak against this ban, and he viewed some of them as agitators, to use his words. But he did say that he would welcome a sit-down with anyone who wishes to partake in a thoughtful discussion about solutions. I'm wondering, do you see any middle ground here? For example, if their concern is spreading hepatitis, isn't it possible to hold feedings in a way that wouldn't spread hepatitis if people, if the food handlers have proper training and trash is picked up and so forth?
Personally, I was not able to make it to the city council event. I know that other activist community members were very vocal at the city council event. I would greatly like to sit down and have any discussion that would talk about civil regulated measures that we could continue feeding and serving food to community members. I know, speaking for ourselves, Food Not Bombs, all of us have our food handlers permits. Mm-hmm. We go through extra links to make sure that we prepare food in a clean environment.
You wear gloves.
We wear gloves. Mm-hmm. We have disposable utensils, disposable trays and foods, bowls and plates. Safety is utmost concern.
Yeah.
And we follow the same regulations that restaurants do with our food handler's permit. I don't mm-hmm. really understand the differentiation between like what a corporate entity is doing mm-hmm. versus a charitable entity.
Yeah, or a church. So maybe it's just a matter of training the people that want to do the feeding, how to make sure that they're doing it in a safe and clean manner.
Oh, I completely agree with that. I think that should basically be standard anyway.
So if people want to get involved and they want to participate in this event or come and show solidarity, where can they get more information?
Okay, well, right now there is two event pages circling around on Facebook. The first one is the 19th event, and that's being held by Mark Lane. I'm sure you can also hit him up on Facebook for any questions. He's a great guy, and he's mm-hmm. really open about things. The other event on the 25th, there is also another Facebook event page for, but you can contact Food Not Bombs at our Food Not Bombs San Diego Facebook page or foodnotbombs.net.
In the past, when we have talked to people at the city of El Cajon, about homelessness, and there's criticism that maybe they're not doing enough, their response has typically been, look, Miriam, why are people not complaining about the other cities around here that are doing a lot less than we are? We're doing more than La Mesa, Santee, Lemon Grove, or even the county, because at least we have a shelter that we're donating a significant amount of money to. And the way that shelter works is the East County Transitional Living Center. A portion of it is non-denominational, and that's the part the city gives money to, which does provide temporary housing and shelter to help people in immediate need. But to get the longer-term help with the job training and so forth, they have to agree to be clean and sober, and they also have to basically accept Jesus, and it's a religious, faith-based program. So what would your response be to that?
I would commend El Cajon for making steps to help the houseless community and people recover and get back on their feet. But at the same time, co-opting through religious groups, you are sending a signal to marginalized groups, homosexual groups, trans groups that may not necessarily be comfortable because of the demonization from religious groups seeking resources in those places. I feel there should be some more horizontal resources offered that don't come with the added outside influences, and maybe just straight across, like, deals with poverty in general. Like, let's fight the problem and help these get these people the help they need without them having to change their identity.
Yeah, you've told me that even out here, you have seen homeless people who are Muslim, who are Hindu, who are faiths
exactly.
other than Christianity.
Religion is not a factor on poverty. Hindu or Muslim people, members of our community, aren't necessarily going to feel as comfortable going to some, per se, evangelical Christian group that may be really preachy at them and about who they are and their personal identity.
So maybe what's needed is a non-sectarian version of the program they have there, which actually, you know, has some good things to it, but to have something similar or maybe even expanded that anybody could feel free to participate in.
Right, definitely. Some intersectional help across the board for all members of our community is what's needed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all in this position together. Everyone out there is only a couple paychecks away from being in the same situation.
Yeah, we've been talking about the stopgap measure, which is how do we feed people on the streets and keep them from starving to death at least.
Right.
But what is the longer term answer? As housing costs go up and up and incomes aren't, and there's all these other problems. If you were mayor of El Cajon, you could wave your magic wand and push through the measures you wanted. What do you see as a better solution?
I mean, if we're talking not short-term and talking a long-term solution, I would look towards Toronto and some other Canadian cities where they've done research and found that housing assistance programs cost two-thirds less than police sweeps, trash, property theft, jailing people, medical expenses, ambulances, people dying on the street, pedestrian deaths.
So just simply paying to put them into some low-income housing.
Right.
What about with supportive services to help them?
100%. I mean, housing first. Once you get the housing situated for these people, then you can start working on drug programs, alcohol programs, job placement, job training, mm-hmm. getting people in a situation they can start having child care for their children. I mean, these are whole families on the street right now. This isn't...
Yeah, it's really sad.
It is.
I really want to thank you for taking the time to join us today. And listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Dash McTavish with Food Not Bombs, which is going to be holding a feeding of the homeless in defiance of El Cajon's ban on feeding the homeless in public places out at Wells Park on Saturday, the 25th of November, just in time for Thanksgiving, at 5 p.m. I'm going to give you the final word. What else would you like our listeners to know, Dash?
Thank you again for having me on today. So I had a chance to talk about Food Not Bombs and what we're doing. I would like to invite everybody, even after this event, to look into Food Not Bombs and what we're doing into our community. During the holidays, people feel extremely charitable, and that's awesome. I fully support that. Go out and help people in your community. That's great. But all year long, there's people in your community who need help, that are struggling, and that are no different than you or me. And if you could spend a little bit of your time, I mean, just come out even once a month, once every other month, and help us out, you would be amazed at the changes you're making in your own communities.
Very good. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Dash, on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the network. for Social Justice to talk about this very important issue of helping the homeless in our communities.
Thank you for having me.
County Fire Marshal Greg Schreiner urges you to do a fast and easy review of your household safety plan. First, test all your home smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors to make sure they are working. This takes just a few minutes, but it is important because you're staking your lives on those devices if a fire breaks out in the middle of the night. Most smoke or carbon monoxide detectors have a button you can press to test the alarm. If you hear beeping, the battery is still good. Safety experts suggest checking the battery in your smoke detector on a monthly basis and replacing the battery every year, even if it's still working, ideally when you set your clocks back each fall. Newer smoke detector models may come equipped with a special battery that has a 10-year service life that is not replaceable. In this case, continue to test the battery monthly and replace the entire unit after 10 years. Generally, all smoke detectors should be replaced after 10 years to ensure that continued protection is in place. This simple step can save your life or your loved one's. More than half of fatal home fires occur from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. when people are often sleeping. The risk of dying in a home fire is cut in half by having a working smoke detector installed, according to the U.S. Fire Administration. You can also take time to check your emergency supplies kit and replace stored water so it won't go stale. Also check the batteries in your kit, as well as food and medication items, to make sure those items have not expired. Emergency officials recommend that people rotate water and food out of their emergency supply kits every 6 months. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes live music at La Mesa Wine Works, a meteor shower watching event at Oak Oasis Park in Lakeside, and the ever-popular Mother Goose Parade.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions over the next month, including Pomegranate Days at Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, Holiday Lights on Main in El Cajon, Holiday Hay Rides in Santa Isabel, a Julian Country Christmas, a bonfire and ice skating in Lemon Grove, Lakeside Spirit of Christmas on Main, a Christmas Cabaret, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, and the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra's Sounds Good performance of Handel's Messiah and other holiday favorites.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
La Mesa Wine Works will host live music this weekend. The Ideas, a rock and roll trio high energy band, will perform on Friday from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. On Saturday night at the same time, the Hamishaw Project will play Americana, rock, and blues music. Then, on Sunday afternoon from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m., the PLJ Band with Scott Lopez will provide jazz music. For more information, you can visit lamesawineworks.com.
You're invited to watch the Leonid Meteor Shower this Sunday at Oak Oasis Park in Lakeside, but you'll have to arise early since the viewing is from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. A ranger will also be on hand for the show. Bring a lawn chair and some blankets to stay warm, and be one of the few San Diegans up at that time of night to catch some meteors. For more information, visit the Oak Oasis County Preserve website or call 619-561-0580.
The 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade will be on November 19th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving. This year's parade theme is Family Traditions. The parade begins at 1 p.m. You can see over 100 colorful and exciting parade entries, including floats, marching bands, clowns, equestrians, local dignitaries, TV celebrity, and Santa Claus. The parade grand marshal is Randy Jones, former San Diego Padre and Cy Young Award winner. The parade route runs along downtown's Main Street from El Cajon Boulevard eastbound to First Street. This popular parade is one of the largest parades in Southern California and a wonderful way to officially kick off the holiday season. You can learn more at mothergooseparade.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to Pomegranate Days on November 24th through the 26th. You can cuddle with camels, feed them apples and pomegranates, watch an exotic bird show and a turkey stampede, shop for camel's milk soaps and lotions, and see the Russell Brothers Family Circus performing magical feats beneath a big top tent. For details on this one-of-a-kind event, you can visit cameldairy.com.
The City of El Cajon invites you to Holiday Lights on Main on November 25th from noon to 7 p.m. in Prescott Promenade, with the lighting of a giant holiday tree at 6 p.m. Activities include ice skating, Santa's Village, carnival rides, live music, food, and holiday shopping. For a map and more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian, will be offering a holiday hayride activity package on November 25th from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Activities include a holiday hayride with caroling, candle dipping, rustic ornament making, cider pressing, a country hoedown, petting zoo, tomahawk throwing, rope making, a ghost town, slingshot range, hoops and stick relay races, nature walks, and a tire swing. For more information, visit fortcross.com.
Christmas comes to Julian every year in an old-fashioned way with a country Christmas tree lighting celebration on Saturday, November 25th, to start the holiday season. Festivities start at 2 p.m. and continue until 7 p.m., including lighting of a giant Christmas tree in Pioneer Park, just one block from Julian's historic town hall. You'll feel a nip in the air, sniff wood fires, and maybe catch a glimpse of snow-capped mountains surrounding town. The holiday season in Julian also offers an opportunity to shop at small boutiques and craft shows without crowds or lines for one-of-a-kind gifts. After the lighting of the giant tree, children can also enjoy visits with Santa Claus.
The City of Lemon Grove will hold its 20th annual holiday Light Up the Grove bonfire on December 1st from noon to 8 p.m. in Civic Center Park. Event hours are extended this year to mark Lemon Grove's 40th anniversary of incorporation. The bonfire lighting at 6 p.m. will be preceded by game booths, rock climbing wall, hayrides, arts and crafts, live music, and skating on an actual ice rink. Lemon Grove Historical Society will also host its traditional open house, serving up hot chocolate for all.
Lakeside's Chamber of Commerce invites you to celebrate the spirit of Christmas on Main Street in downtown Lakeside on December 2nd from 4 to 9 p.m. This event features Santa Claus, craft booths, vendors, jumps and rides for kids, performances by local school students, and the lighting of a community Christmas tree. Find details at lakesidechamber.org and at lakesiderodeo.com.
You're invited to hike Vulcan Mountain in Julian for a supermoon viewing on Saturday, December 2nd from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. A supermoon is a full moon that appears larger and brighter than normal because its orbit is closer than usual to the Earth. Join Ranger Bill on a 7-mile early winter hike. This hike has 1,000 feet of elevation gain, so come prepared. Ranger Bill will tell you about the geography, flora, and fauna of the area as you head up Vulcan Mountain, reaching the summit at sunset, and see expansive views of Julian and the desert. Then, the light of the silvery supermoon will show the path back down. For more information, visit the Vulcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve website or call 760-765-4098.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa invites you to get in the holiday spirit at a Christmas cabaret showing December 1st through 17th. Lamplighters presents an uplifting showcase of local talent performing seasonal favorites, not only from Christmas, but many December holidays as well. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
The La Mesa Village Association hosts its annual Holiday in the Village celebration on Saturday, December 9th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday, December 10th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Stroll through the streets of La Mesa's historic downtown and enjoy live music and dance, cozy fires, crafts, vendors, food, and a kids area with holiday movies and activities. For more information, you can visit lamesavillageassociation.org.
On Sunday, December 10th at 3 p.m., the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present the Sounds Good Holiday Concert at College Avenue Baptist Church, featuring the Christmas portion of Handel's beloved Messiah, along with selections of popular holiday music. In addition to the chorus and orchestra, there will also be solo performers. The San Diego Festival Chorus was founded over 15 years ago by Maestro Mostardo and is made up of singers and players from the community who love to make music. The chorus is always happy to welcome new members. You can find more information and tickets for the holiday concert at sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
The East County Transitional Living Center is in need of fresh or frozen turkeys to feed its more than 400 residents in El Cajon on Thanksgiving Day. The residents are recovering from homelessness or addiction. The center's head chef, Robert Webb, is a former member of the program himself who was homeless at a down point in his own life and turned up at the East County Transitional Living Center looking for a sandwich. He'd been a five-star chef working at a major hotel in San Diego before getting down on his luck, and now he's cooking up turkeys for the center's Thanksgiving feast. Pastor Harold Brown, founder of the center, says everyone needs a hand up every once in a while, and that's what we offer here. He adds, lives are transformed. Miracles happen every day. We are thankful we can help lessen the corrosive patterns of homelessness and addiction, one unique and valued life at a time. Fresh or frozen turkeys can be delivered to the East County Transitional Living Center's front office between Tuesday, November 14th and Tuesday, November 21st, and donation receipts will be issued. The center is located at 1527 East Main Street in El Cajon. The center serves up 3 meals a day to its 400 residents year-round. That's 1,200 meals every day, or over 400,000 meals each year. For more information on the East County Transitional Living Center, you can visit loveectlc.org.
This is Gene Carpenter with an important announcement about your healthcare options. Open enrollment to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, for 2018 begins on November 1st and ends December 15th. Many Americans aren't getting this important information since the Trump administration has taken the following steps to sabotage getting word out and discouraging people from signing up. He has slashed the ACA's advertising budget by 90%, cut the open enrollment period from 12 weeks to 6 weeks, cut funding for nonprofits that help people sign up for ACA health insurance plans, ended subsidies to help middle-income Americans buy health insurance, and signed an executive order raising premiums for older, sicker Americans and making it easier for insurers to sell junk plans at low cost, but with skimpy coverage that may exclude such items as maternity care, services for the disabled, and mental illness treatment. California's Attorney General recently filed a lawsuit seeking to block the Trump administration from cutting subsidies. A new poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation, taken in early October, shows that 70% of Americans believe it's more important for the president to make the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, work than to make it fail, CNBC reports. The poll also found that 66% want Congress to work on fixing Obamacare instead of repealing it. So Trump's actions are contrary to what the majority of Americans, including many Trump voters, now say they want. California's exchange offers Affordable Care Act policies through 11 different insurance companies that you can choose from. For information on policies available in California under the Affordable Care Act, or to sign up for a plan, you can visit coveredca.com.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here with John Fastier. This holiday season, if you're looking for some safe conversation topics to liven up your next gathering with friends and family without bringing up politics, here are some fascinating holiday trivia facts to share.
Candy canes are stocking stuffer traditions, but they were actually invented to keep children quiet during church.
In medieval times, the main dish served at Christmas dinners was peacock, not turkey.
Jingle Bells was originally written for Thanksgiving, not Christmas.
Christmas trees were once considered pagan symbols, but today 350 million of them are grown on Christmas tree farms in the U.S., where 98% of all Christmas trees sold are now sustainably raised. A Christmas tree grows for 15 years on average before it is cut.
The world's tallest snowman was actually a snow woman, standing over 122 feet tall. She was built by townspeople in Bethel, Maine, with wreaths as eyes, skis for eyelashes, tires as buttons, and trees for her arms.
According to the Bible, magi, also known as wise men, brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh to the Christ child born in a manger. The term magi derives from ancient Greece and Persia, where it meant magicians or astronomers.
The magi reportedly followed the Star of Bethlehem. To this day, scientists are not sure what that star was. Possibly a conjunction of two planets, a comet, a supernova, or something else that lit up the sky.
The first electric Christmas lights to light up the sky were invented by Thomas Edison.
Hanukkah is also called the Festival of Lights. A menorah is lit for 8 nights and traditionally placed in a window to remind the outside world of the miracle of oil that burned for 8 days after rededication of a temple in Jerusalem.
Originally, the only Hanukkah gifts were small amounts of money known as gelt, a tradition that was designed to teach children the importance of charity.
The first Hanukkah party in the White House was hosted by President George W. Bush, a tradition that continues to this day.
The most popular Christmas song of all times, White Christmas, was written by Irving Berlin, a Jewish songwriter.
Americans spend 6 times more on gifts than food during the holiday season, but they are also more apt to donate to charities at this time of year.
Santa Claus would have to travel at over 5 million miles per hour in order to deliver presents to all of the children on Earth in a single night.
The tradition of making New Year's resolutions was started by the ancient Babylonians, who actually celebrated the New Year in springtime. The most common resolution was to return borrowed farm equipment.
Roman Emperor Julius Caesar established the Julian calendar that we use today, with January 1st as the first day of the new year.
Today, the most common resolution is to lose weight. Not surprising, since the average Christmas dinner in America contains over 7,000 calories.
Dropping a ball in Times Square to ring in the new year began in 1907 because fireworks had been banned as too dangerous. The ball has been a New Year's tradition ever since, except in 1942 and 1943 when it was canceled due to wartime restrictions.
The first ball was made of iron and wood, adorned with 100 light bulbs. It weighed 700 pounds. Nowadays, the ball weighs nearly 12,000 pounds and shimmers with 2,668 Waterford crystals.
All year long, visitors to Times Square in New York City write their New Year's wishes on pieces of confetti. At the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve, those wishes are included in over a ton of confetti that showers the crowd gathered to ring in the new year. And now from all of us at East County Magazine, to all of you, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, joyous Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, guest hosting the Sounds of History, recording on the road today in Ramona. We are at the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona, which is a marvelous place, and it is my great pleasure today to introduce our special guest, Ken Woodward, who is the curator of the museum. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I understand that your own family has long roots in Ramona. Tell us a little bit about your own family history first, and then we'll talk about the museum.
Yes, my family came out of Kellogg, Iowa. They came to Ramona in 1896, and the whole family, aunts, uncles, grandfather, grandmother, kids, girlfriends, the whole group. Two of them, they were actually farmers and dairymen out of Kellogg, Iowa.
And so what brought them to California, and how did they get here?
Well, they had lived in Iowa for many, many years, and they were just simply getting tired of the harsh winters and trying to take care of their farms and cattle. And so the whole family just packed up and came westward. That was my great-grandfather and all of his brothers and sisters.
Now, I understand that your family has quite the history here in Ramona. Can you give us a couple of highlights?
Yes. My family, they were farmers and dairymen, and later, my dad and his six brothers and sisters became very attached to Ramona. They grew up here. My dad's brother became a very famous historical archaeologist and historian. And my dad moved on in the 1930s and became chief of police in Oceanside, where he finished his years.
Now, let's hear about the museum.
The primary purpose of the museum was to commemorate the old-timers in Ramona, and they came here, they began coming here in about 1870.
Now, Ken, I understand that when your father was putting this whole marvelous museum together with all these different buildings, that he got some help from somebody who had a lot of experience in stage set design. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was very fortunate. Mr. Bill Cowan had moved to Ramona, and he had retired, and Bill Cowan was actually worked for Walt Disney Studios, and he built sets and built towns for Walt Disney Studios. So when my dad got ready to begin building some of the old barns and everything, he was very glad to help.
Yeah, this really does look like you've been plopped down and reincarnated in the middle of the Old West here with all these wonderful buildings. The centerpiece of it is the Theophile Verlaki House.
Yes.
And that was built, I understand, in 1886?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the house and how it came to be built.
Yes, Theophile Verlaki, he was a Basque from southern France. And at the time he left France in 1870 to come to the New World, to make his living. The whole Verlaki family came in to New Orleans, and then he found his way in 1870 to San Diego. And he became very prominent in San Diego. He built several businesses there, became one of the largest wine producers in San Diego.
Wow, so Ramona's wine industry has roots that go all the way back to the 1800s. Very interesting. And today it's certainly a thriving business up here. What can people see if they go into the Verlaki house today?
Well, I always tell people that they need to understand that everything they see here on this property has all been donated, mainly because the museum is a nonprofit organization. And when they go into that beautiful home, and it is all adobe, and they will find it beautifully furnished with all donated furniture, with all kinds of books in the library, with all kinds of furnishings in throughout.
And there's also a doctor's office. Tell us about that.
And there's a really interesting doctor's office. One of the bedrooms has been converted into a doctor's office. And that is, we have very old medical equipment that actually goes back to the 1800s that doctors have been donating to the museum. And it's really fascinating to see these old pieces of equipment.
There's also some very ornate furnishings. There's a fabulous antique grand piano in there, an old pump organ, a Victrola. And in one of the back bedrooms, I understand there's a bedroom set with an interesting history, too, very ornate.
Yes, the bedroom set is brought in to the museum in 1980. And this lady came in and said, I'd like to donate this beautiful bedroom set. It was built in 1840 back in Connecticut. But she said, you need to know who I am. She said, first of all, I'm part of the Yale family, the producers of the Yale Lock Company. And my great-great-grandfather in 1840 was the person who put together the Yale Lock Company.
Now, there's a lot more than just a vintage home on this property, however. You have amassed an amazing collection of some of the original buildings here in Ramona. Folks, if you come out here to the museum, the Guy B. Woodward Museum, you can see a vintage schoolhouse, a blacksmith shop, a barn, buggies, all kinds of interesting buildings, covered wagon, and also a jail. Now, I understand there's a really colorful history behind that jail. Tell us about it.
The jail was actually built in San Diego about 1890, and the jail was brought up here, 7 tons of iron, brought up to Ramona, and installed as the Ramona Jail. And then it, in the 1930s, it disappeared. And
so the jail was stolen?
No. The county of San Diego started using it for a dynamite storage, and it was found in a canyon and brought back to the museum.
Now, I understand that your mother used to have a job related to the jail.
Actually, that was my grandmother. And my grandmother, back in the early late 1800s, her job was to feed the prisoners, and she got 15 cents a day to bring them broth in.
And it has now been restored and brought back here to Ramona, and you can see it if you come out to visit the Guy B. Woodward Museum. Now, there's some other interesting buildings here. We're doing the interview actually sitting here in an old barn. What's the history of this?
Actually, it was one of my dad's ideas to bring in all of the old barns and all the old buildings that he could to the museum property. This barn was built in 1870. It was built by the Barnett family who came into Ramona from San Francisco area.
Looks like it's set up for meetings. Do you hold different kinds of meetings or events in here nowadays?
Yes. Every other month we have a potluck, and people are simply invited to bring something that they can share with everyone else. And we come in here and we have speakers on history and Ramona and things of this nature. It's really very good.
What fun. That's just an amazing resource to find. This place is a veritable treasure trove. As you walk through, you see antique dolls and vintage clothing and furnishings and tools. And there was a very interesting giant cook pot out there. Tell us about that.
The cook pot actually belonged to the Ortega family. And the Ortega family came to the valley in 1843. And they actually owned all 17,000 acres here in the valley.
So this was the family that received the land through the original Spanish land grant.
That's correct. And so the Ortegas proceeded to use the valley for farming all kinds of wheat and everything.
Now, of course, long before the original settlers came here, we had the Native Americans, the Kumeyaay people. I understand you have some Native American artifacts that people can see here as well.
Yes, the Kumeyaay Indians came to the valley 2,000 years ago, and we have some beautiful Indian artifacts, a whole display in the basement from that tribe.
Wow, I would love to take a look at that. And I understand, by the way, that the Kumeyaay now say they trace their history in the San Diego region back 10 to 12,000 years. Interesting, they've recently found some artifacts in some other areas that suggest they may have been here even a lot longer than that. There are also a lot of interesting vehicles here. I see some vintage buggies, you know, like horse-drawn buggies, and what looks like a Conestoga wagon or covered wagon out there. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, the one large wagon that we have, it seats about 12 people, and it used to take all the people that came into Lakeside into Julian. It took 12 hours for that wagon to take 12 people from Lakeside to Julian.
My goodness, how times have changed. And the kids think they have it rough now. Now, when your father was first getting started and putting this all together, there was another benefactor from San Diego who came along. He was the owner of San Diego Trust and Savings. Can you give us some details?
Yes, Mr. Thomas W. Sefton stopped by to see my dad one time and introduced himself, and my dad took him all the way through the museum and told him what he intended to do, and Mr. Sefton said, "Guy, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to donate my mining equipment to the museum," which he did later on.
Yeah, and your father started this back in the 1980s or so, and then I understand that after he passed on and after Mr. Sefton passed on, the mantle kind of fell to you, and you came along and went downtown to retrieve all the mining equipment.
Yes, we were very fortunate because the Sefton family gave me a call one day and they said, Ken, I understand that our father promised to give you all of the mining equipment from the Colorado, California, Nevada gold mines. And I said, yes, he did. And they said, well, come down and get it.
What else did you find when you went down there?
First of all, they directed me to a warehouse next on Marina Boulevard, right next to the train tracks. And so I went down, knocked on the door, took a look, and the train tracks actually came into this large barn area, and Mr. Sefton's own personal railroad car was there.
What those very wealthy travelers used to use to go cross-country in the olden days. Now, he also donated some other interesting things. I see a tall ship replica down here. What else?
Well, in addition to the ship replica, it's difficult to believe, but he also donated the keys to Mount Vernon, George Washington's house. And that has always been a very interesting display.
Well, there you go. That's amazing. What else can people see that you would like people to know about the museum and the facilities here?
Well, the way the museum is put together, I think, is the most important. Because all of a sudden the centerpiece is the Verlac House, built in 1886. You have a full-size basement, which is filled with beautiful artifacts. Then we have adorned on, my dad had brought in all of these buildings from the 1870s, and he reconstructed them here on the property. We're sitting in an old barn that was built in 1870.
It's amazing. It's really one of those little-known treasures we have out here in East County that I think a lot of people don't know about and would love to visit if they could. Now, speaking of visiting, when is the museum open to the public?
The museum is open to the public as advertised Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 4 o'clock. However, the museum is also open Monday through Thursday. We have one of our workers here, and they will open up the museum to anyone that desires to come in during the week.
Well, that's a good tip for our listeners here at East County Magazine. I know it's run by a nonprofit organization. So if people have maybe old artifacts out there from the Ramona area in their basements or attics, who would they get in touch with if they have something they may wish to donate?
They would get in touch with our main office here on the grounds and describe what they would like to donate to see if we can use it and see if it fits in. And that has been done. You'll be surprised at the number of artifacts that we have here that are local to Ramona.
Wonderful. So if you want to visit the museum, you can visit their website at www.woodwardmuseum.org. Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to give you the last word here. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Woodward Museum or the history of Ramona?
Well, I think it's really interesting. We have people from all over the world going through this museum. People coming in to visit California, they hear about the museum, they come up and they get a wonderful trip through the museum.
And it's located right on Main Street here in the heart of downtown Ramona today. Ken, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much, and it's been a delight talking to you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.